Blog Talk Radio.
Hold on, Queen. Never mind. Go ahead. Damn. Even Block Talk against me today.
Yes. 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 Yes.
We are back on air. Go on, Queen. I had to get that in there early.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. It's Queen Vibes. This is Queen Vibes Reality Talk. I am alongside my co-host, Mr. Hakim Nuba.
Peace, Queen. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I had to mentally prepare myself. You know, this is a relaxed setting today. A great show. I'm excited. You know how I feel about mental health, and so I'm excited to have this guest on today. How are you doing?
I'm good. It shows what kind of people are we that we have to mentally prepare ourselves to chill and have a relaxed conversation. We got issues.
We do. But we have acknowledged that a long time ago. And that says a lot for people who listen to us, because y'all keep coming back, and we appreciate y'all.
Well, yes. we have a special guest in the house.
Yes, we do. I'm excited. She's been a supporter, and she's been sharing the flyers. For a while now. She's also been tuning in, and she also has called in to one of our shows and chimed in to the discussion that we had on hand. And today on Talk Tuesday, we're welcoming our special guest, Barbara Ann, and she is the CEO of No More Trauma Consultants. If you are not following her, make sure you are following her. Tune into her live, support, share, and get the word out there, because as I always say, mental health is very important. And we're going to be able to pick her brain a little bit and talk about who she is, what she does, why she decided to become into the field of mental health. You know, we're going to discuss how childhood trauma can affect us later in life, what role does traumatic experiences as a child play in our mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being as adults. To join the conversation with us, all questions are welcome. You can call in 929-477-1436. Don't forget to press 1 on your telephone keypad to go live with us. So, any words before we begin?
Jesus Christ, you said it like we about to go into. No, I just want to get cooking with Ms. Barbara Ann. We have people who terribly needs her word, her services, and her message today. So without any further ado, welcome aboard, Ms. Barbara Ann.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much. How is everybody tonight?
Doing good. We're ready, and we are ready for you to drop these jewels and bless us with your knowledge of this of mental health and childhood trauma, because some of us suffer from it and may not even know.
Absolutely.
Because you got to be able let go and dig deep and figure it all out. When people are going through some things, they just don't know. You know, some of this stuff is suppressed. So I'm excited to have you here. I know a couple of people that are listening that need to hear some things, and I'm excited.
I'm excited too. Awesome. Thank you for having me.
No problem.
Tell us about yourself. Who are you? What you doing here?
So I am Barbara Ann, and as you guys mentioned, I'm the CEO of No More Trauma Consulting. And how that came about is because, of course, I myself have experienced trauma, childhood trauma. And I don't like to compare someone else's trauma, you know, to mine. Some people, we have the mindset of, you know, well, I went through something way worse. It's not a matter of good or bad, because when we, as we get into it, we understand that trauma is actually your brain telling you that this is too much. So whatever that is, it's actually your brain. So you and I can go through the same thing, and it may be traumatic for you, but it may not be traumatic for me. So I've learned to just give people, you know, their space. And understand that if that was traumatic for them, it may not have been that traumatic for me, but hey, it's traumatic for you, so let's deal with that. So my trauma came from childhood. My mother became addicted to drugs about a year after I was born. And at that time, I didn't know who my father was. I had a name, but I never had a face to put with his name. And my grandmother raised me. Around 10 or 11 years old, my grandmother became handicapped due to diabetes, gangrene. Her leg was amputated, and I was her caretaker. She had 7 children, but I was the one that took care of her. She transitioned. She passed away when I was 14 years old, and from that time is actually when, for me, my trauma actually began. And some people might say, oh, it wasn't traumatic that your mother was on drugs. Yes, that was traumatic. But one thing I understand about trauma is that what makes an event a traumatic event is all the details around it. So what happened before, what happened during, and what happened after is what creates the traumatic event. So before, my mother was on drugs. I didn't know my father. During, I was living with my grandmother, who was handicapped. After, my grandmother passed away. So then I have nowhere to go. And so I was tossed around here and there, and you know, some people that took me in were very nice. Some people were not. My mother was on drugs. And as a child, I never understood why nothing in my mother's brain clicked to say, let me get myself together for my child. When I was with her mother, you know, she knew I was safe. She can come and see me whenever she wanted to. You know, that's understandable. But when my grandmother passed away and I had no one else, my mother still didn't get herself together. She still was, you know, chasing the drugs. And so it was difficult for me. And like everybody else, instead of dealing with the trauma of my grandmother passing, instead of dealing with the trauma that I didn't know my father, instead of dealing with all of that stuff, I just kept going on. And then to make matters worse, the adults that were in my life didn't say, this girl needs some help. They looked at my behavior and they just labeled me as rebellious, defiant. Mm-hmm. They put all these labels on me, but they didn't look at everything that was going on in my life and said, this girl needs some help. So it just kept happening and happening. I kept finding myself in more traumatic events. And so it wasn't until 2012, after I had my last daughter, I was diagnosed with postpartum depression. And so they wanted to put me on medication. I said, nope. Then they suggested that I go to therapy. But the therapist, the outpatient therapy, was conflicting with my work hours. So then I up and moved to Maryland. And as I'm in Maryland, you know, I'm navigating and I'm looking for my children's doctor's office. And so I walked into the wrong building, but it wasn't the wrong building. It actually was a therapist's office. And as I'm talking to them, I found out they took my insurance, which was great. And I filled out paperwork before I left. I had an appointment. And so when I went to my first appointment, of course, you know, everybody starts off with the infamous phrase, you know, tell me about your childhood. And so I started talking, and she started writing, and I'm talking, and she's writing. And before I knew it, the session was over. And she said, okay, well, I'll see you next week. And, you know, in my mind, I'm like, no, hold up. You were supposed to fix me. Like, what do you mean see you next week? You know, and so, but before I left, she gave me something that no one had ever given me. She told me that I had experienced a lot of trauma. And that was the very first time that anyone had associated that word with the things that I had gone through. And so I swore that I would never go back because it didn't help. But I found myself back in the same seat the following week. And that was the catalyst to my healing. And I've been on my healing journey ever since. And it hasn't been easy. And it's been ugly. It's been rough. But I'm here. And so as I started to heal, I realized that there were so many other people that were dealing with the same thing, if not more. And they needed someone who had gone through that process to help them and assist them. Because a lot of us, like you said, we don't know that our actions are a traumatic response. We don't understand the way we're thinking is based off of the things that happened to us, whether we remember them or not. Because trauma is so tricky. Sometimes our brain literally puts things out and we forget that these things happen, but our body doesn't forget the trauma. So we react and we respond and we don't understand why. And so when I realized that it was so many people that could benefit from the things that I had gone through, like my pain and my misery was not in vain. I can help someone else. And so that's how No More Trauma Consulting became what it is today.
Yeah. See, that's what I like. I like the fact that you, well, first of all, I commend you for realizing that when you said it was the wrong building, but it was the right building. Like, yes, that you realize once you got there, it's like, okay, I was meant to be here, so now I'm here, let me sign up.
Absolutely.
Also commend you standing that even though you felt like, okay, you didn't do anything, but then you had to sit and think like, okay, this is a process. I have to continue to go back. Because some people think it's an easy fix. It's not. Especially when this is something that happened years ago. And sometimes it's happened 15, 20, 30 years ago for some people. And they have hit in it and it's depressed. And they don't know that it affected them. So it takes some time to dig. Like, you, it didn't happen overnight, so it's not going to be fixed overnight. So I commend you for that, as well as now you're working on your healing journey, and now you're going to help others. That's how Kim had brought to our attention in a different show, where the knowledge is no good if you don't give it to others. If you don't pass it on, what good is having the knowledge, the answers, if you're not going to share it?
Exactly.
So I commend you, and that's your journey. And now you're going to be the reason. You're going to be a character. You're going to be a part of someone else's journey. And so I just wanted to commend you on that, because some people, it's like, it takes them a while. They're not ready. They're resistant. They're fighting. And they don't have someone telling them, like, listen, you got to do this, or go get help, or this is what you need to do. You took it as a sign and you ran with it.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about your journey a little bit.
What
was the turning point for you? Could you touch base on it a little bit for those who are in the middle of their journey and they can't figure out which way it's going and they feel like they're just lost? At what point did you find that part of yourself that says, you know what, I know what this is, and I know I need to fix it?
I don't think it ever was, I know what this is and I need to fix it. I think it was, I'm tired of repeating the same cycle. I think that's what it was for me. I found myself in situations where literally every single year for about 3 years in a row, I was found having to rebuild my life because I made a decision And I'm just going to be really transparent with you guys. Because I lacked the family and the love, I was looking for that so desperately. I wanted love. I wanted a family. And so, you know, I got into a relationship with a guy, and he says he loves me, and let's get married, let's have children. I did it because my brain was, I wanted to create my own family, because I always said that I don't have family, I have relatives. And when what happened was when my grandmother didn't leave my relatives any money, I no longer became family. So that was that for me. So in me longing to create my own family and wanting love and wanting to be accepted, that it drove every decision that I made, and I found myself in a repeated cycle of failure, choosing the wrong men, and then having babies by men that I didn't, you know, basically didn't know. I didn't give myself any time to learn these men because they were talking that sweet talk. They were talking a good game, and I fell for it, and I was pregnant. I was having a baby, and before the baby came, the relationship was over. And so I found myself in the same cycle, and I just said, I cannot keep doing this. And that's why, you know, coincidentally but not coincidentally, after I had my last daughter, I said, I'm not doing this again. I cannot do that. I cannot keep repeating the same cycle. And so for me, that's what it was. It was, I got tired of repeating the same cycle and not getting the results that I intended to get in the beginning.
Okay. So I know you mentioned
awesome.
That you want children. How does the trauma that you had as a child affect how you interact with your children, or how you raise your children, or, you know, what advice you give them?
Very good question. So I like to say I have two sets of children. My two older children, I had them while I was very much operating in my trauma, and I can see the effects of that. My two younger children, I had them as I was coming out of my trauma. So as far as their memory and their recall, they don't remember me and my trauma. So as the two older daughters are talking to the two younger daughters are like, wait, mommy did what? They can't fathom it. And so
it's
very interesting. I'm actually going to do a live the end of this month with my two older daughters, and the topic is going to be how unresolved childhood trauma affected my parenting. So my two older daughters remember very vividly, you know, the careless mistakes that I made, me being so harsh on them, me not listening to them. I actually had to go to therapy with my 16-year-old daughter the early part of this year because she had completely lost her mind. And I said, let me go help you find it. And and so we went to therapy, and it was rough. It was rough by Hakim. It was rough because my baby, she said some things to me that I had to let marinate. In my reaction, I wanted to lash out, like, what? But I had to let it marinate because this was her experience of me during a time where I was definitely operating in my trauma. So when I had to sit and listen to my daughter tell me that she felt like she was invisible, that she felt like I didn't see her. She was always the air quote good child because she never pushed my limits. She was quiet. She stayed to herself. And because I never asked her certain questions, she never learned how to communicate. And then I started to get angry with her when she wouldn't communicate as she got older. So I had to go back and I had to apologize to my daughter. I had to ask my daughter for forgiveness without an excuse, without the you know, I did this because that doesn't matter to her, because what's real for her is the pain. What's real for her is what she's feeling. So I had to validate her feelings. And so once I did that, and then I started to repair, and I realized that I had to be consistent. It's not going to happen overnight. And now we're the year's almost over, and this happened maybe this time last year. We're good. It's still a work in progress, but we're good. But we both had to change. But in order for that change to happen, I had to sit in that discomfort of some things that my baby had to say to me that I had to just let. And it was rough because, you know, after the session, we got to drive back home together. A lot of those drives was real quiet, you know, because I had to shut my mouth and not say anything. because I needed to let it marinate. I had to, you know, deal with my own emotions about her experience without validating it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yes, you had to put her first.
Yes. I had to. I had, because so many times, you know, us as parents, when we hear things from our children, we're so quick to justify it. Well, I only did that because that doesn't matter in that moment. Maybe later on, maybe after you have asked for forgiveness, maybe after y'all have gotten to a better place, then you can go back and explain. But in that moment, when they're telling you what's happening to them, what their experience is, you cannot justify it in that moment. The only thing that you can do is say, forgive me. Please forgive me. Validate how they feel, because if not, you're going to lose them. You're going to lose them. So that was what I had to, you know, practice what I preach. And it was rough sitting in that counseling session, you know, hearing some things that my baby had to say to me. It was not easy. And even, like I said, the ride home was uncomfortable. And that's why I always tell people, you got to sit in that discomfort in order to get to the other side. It's not going to be roses and lollipops and rainbows and unicorns. It's going to be some darkness. It's going to be some nights you're not going to be able to sleep. It's going to be some tears. It's going to be a whole lot of. But you'll get through it, and once you get through it, you know, now you can see, now we can breathe. My daughter, we have an excellent relationship now. We communicate. You know, she tells me how she feels. I know when to let her have her space, you know, because before she would get quiet, I would push and push and push and push, and then she would, you know, lash out. And I'm now want to ready to take her head off because now she's being disrespectful. But I can't do that. So now I learned to give her space. And when we both have calmed down, we communicate better. So we learn the tools to get to where we want to get to, and we have to practice them. It's one thing to constantly say, this is what you have to do, this is what you have to do. But you have to put it in practice in that moment. You have to be able to say in the heat of the moment, when things are uncomfortable, someone has to be able to say, okay, let's use the tools that we know right now. So you're not ready to talk about it. I get that. But I'm going to give you your space. But let me know when you're ready to talk. I'm here. When we start treating our children like that, then I think things will become a lot easier. I know it was for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, for the parents who have experienced a rough childhood and they're aware that there's some things going on within themselves, and they have children who are coming of age, and is there anything that you can point to keep their eye out, you know, keep their eye open for, or is there any identifiable things that could let them know that, hey, you know, some of the stuff that you've been through will affect the kids?
I think the only way that can happen is you have to talk to your children. Because for me, when the girls were younger, I assumed, and I think that's the worst thing that we can do is assume, but I assumed that because when I was 12, you know, I was kissing and necking on the boys, I thought my 12-year-old daughter was doing the same thing. Because I did it when I was 12, so I used to accuse her, and she was nowhere near that. That wasn't where her mind was, and so I think that the only way to understand is to talk to your children. But you got to first be real with yourself, because if you're not ready to heal, and if you're not ready to address the things that hurt you, then how can you help your children? And in addition to that, a lot of us as parents don't want to talk to our children about our past. We are ashamed. You know, we're just walking around with this unresolved trauma, we walk around with guilt and shame, and we don't want to sit our children down and tell our children, look, this is what I did when I was younger. This is what happened to me when I was younger. You know, we want to hold up this persona to our children as if we've always been this great grandparent. You know, and I think it opens up the lines of communication is very helpful. But first, you have to be ready to deal with yourself. You can't deal with your children if you're not ready to deal with yourself. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
I hear what you're saying when it comes to that, because it's this kind of weird space when it comes to adults and children, where adults feel like, you know, they're the adult and everything is their word. And
yeah,
they may not necessarily be doing it right, you know, especially if they got unresolved issues that they have to deal with. Because
exactly,
of the cycle, when you were younger, it was, I'm the adult, you listen. As adults, we have to listen as well. We have to be able to have that open line of communication with our children to be able to say, you can come talk to me without any judgment, like pick a time, pick a day where
yes,
you're just having a conversation with the children, no judgment. They're not going to get in trouble or yelled at anything. They're not going to be judged or whatever the case may be. Because we needed that when we were younger and we didn't get it. Like, Mom, I remember my mom
yeah,
always saying to me, you can come and talk to me about any and everything. And even though that line of communication was open, as a child, you like, can I really say it? You know,
mm-hmm,
can I really come talk with this? So now I had to realize how I felt as a child, even though my mother wanted to hear everything, but me not knowing how to do it, to now to have that with my children, because I had to put myself in their shoes. And sometimes as adults, we don't put ourselves in our children's shoes, because
mm-hmm,
kids already
yeah,
feel like, act like we never was young before when they're trying to get over or something.
Exactly. I'm so glad that you said that, because that's something that I, like, that's key. Be to your children who you needed when you were their age. That is so key. Something that I do with my children now to open up the lines of communication, when there's something that's really uncomfortable and they're not quite sure how to say it to me without crossing that line of disrespect, I offer them to write me a letter. And I find this to be effective, because when they write me a letter, they have the opportunity to say everything that they need to say, and I have the opportunity to read the letter and process what they're saying to me before I respond.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has been found to be really effective with my children, especially my two older girls.
I'm glad you said that about the letter, because
yes,
I'm a person that rarely uses my filter.
Mm-hmm.
And as a child growing up, it was certain things I wouldn't say to my mom in the fear of feeling like I was going to disrespect her for not
mm-hmm,
having a filter. So
mm-hmm,
when I was 27 years old, I was moving to Pennsylvania, and I was like, okay, I need to make sure, because I had children, I'm like, I need
mm-hmm,
to make sure that being that I'm not right in the same city as my mom, that our relationship is strong enough to withhold the distance, because we're not going to see each other every day. So I sat down, and this is how far along it was, because it was like AOL days. You know, people don't use AOL.
Oh, you're going way back.
And I wrote my mother an email. And this is when I explain certain things to people, I had to let them know what was out at that time so they could know how
mm-hmm,
good it was, you know. And I sat and I wrote her an email, because even at 27, I was like, okay, that filter broken. That filter button is even more broken than it was when I was 16, 17. So
yeah,
I got to get this all out. And it was just mainly a lack of communication. It was like she felt like I was a child that never needed her. And I
mm-hmm,
feel like I was a child that, you know, got the short end. And it was just a miscommunication. It was like I needed her, but I didn't want her. I didn't want to. I was at a place where I was one of those child that didn't want to be dependent on nobody. And I was,
yeah,
I didn't want to be a burden. So if I felt like
mm-hmm,
I could take the ease off my mom, that I would do it, not knowing that that was affecting my mom. Like, okay, she act like she don't never need me for anything, you know? And I wrote that email. It was about 6 pages long, and she read it in a couple of days. She got back because she was able to process it. And I didn't
mm-hmm,
nag her about it, because I know you have to process. That's the problem. People just read and react, or listen
mm-hmm,
and react instead of processing. And me and my mom, it just, ever since that moment, it was just like all the miscommunication was out the window, and we got the best relationship. Like, I can't go a day without talking to my mom.
That's
now.
Awesome.
So I'm glad you brought that up about the letter, because people communicate differently. Some need to text, some need to write it out, some people need to say it, but we also need to give the person that we're relaying the message to time to process it and make sure they, it's the communication is effective. So I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because some people don't understand that it's just not enough to get out what you got to say. You may get the wrong response if you rush the response.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, you got a question?
I want to ask, of course, I mean, we touched a little bit base, and that's all we're going to have to do another show, because it's not an overnight thing. But we talked based on the relationship with you and your children, and I understand completely when you're talking about the two different, you know, time frames of two different experiences. How do you move forward with being able to be in a relationship and also be able to take what you've learned about yourself and what you're working on about yourself and be in this relationship and able to teach that person about, you know, who you are? Because, you know, we have triggers. We, you know, we have touchy situations, and we have things that have not passed that affect how we are in a relationship. How do you do things differently now that you are aware that certain things are an issue and you're working on yourself?
Oh, boy. the relationship,
that good, huh?
The relationship topic is rough, because I truly, honestly believe that it takes two people. I can sit down and talk to somebody, because I'm on my healing journey. So I can talk to somebody about my triggers and the things that happened to me as a child, and, you know, how I can openly talk about those things. But if that other person isn't, number one, open to hear it and receive it, and number two, also share their experiences so that we can, you know, learn how to be together, I think this is a recipe for disaster. So it takes two people. But I think, to answer your question, I think the number one thing is just to be open about what's going on with you. But then it gets tricky. So that thing right there is tricky, because you don't want to open up too much to somebody that you're not really open to trusting. You know, we play around, we teeter totter, because if I'm gonna spoon feed you a little bit, see how you handle that, then I'll spoon feed you some more and see how you handle that. If you don't respond too well, you ain't gonna get the whole plate. You know, it's like, you know, we do that, and then the other person is feeling that. The other person feels the resistance, and so then they respond instead of communicating, instead of saying, hey, you know, listen, I feel like, you know, you're doing X, Y, and Z. And that's another thing, operating in their own trauma that may trigger something from their past. Or she playing around, or he playing around. And it's like you don't communicate, so then you start reacting, you start responding. The phone calls come less, the date nights are less. You know, you start responding based off of what you think is going on with this person, because you never take the time to open up the lines of communication to simply ask, what's going on? I feel like this is happening. I feel like, you know, you're pushing back from me. I feel like you're not communicating with me. I feel like you're only giving me a little bit. Why is that? We won't open up the lines of communication. We say, okay, they're acting like this, so they must be playing, so now I'm going to act like this. And then, bam, what you got? A recipe for disaster.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I hear you. Communication is very important, and no matter who we communicating with, you know, whether it's our neighbor, our spouse, our employee, our employer, our clients, you know, our children, family, communication is very important.
very important, yes. And
consistency
is one of them. Mm-hmm.
It, most definitely, definitely. All right, I have someone who wrote in to me. They're going under the name of Spiritual Tree Hugger. And they write, this is sexuality and trauma. And they go on to say, for the most part of my life, comfortable with my sexual and comfortable with my body. Okay, that's the way they wrote it. Sorry, y'all. But now that I'm starting to remember my trauma as a child, I just feel gross and disgusting, and sexual acts make me super uncomfortable. Is this normal for someone who's starting to remember their childhood trauma?
Absolutely. Mm. It's absolutely normal because, like they say, they forgot about it. And so now mm-hmm. as the memory starts to come back, now you start to feel, like she said, like they said, gross and disgusted. The advice that I would give to them is as they start to remember certain things, the first thing they need to do is to forgive themselves and understand that whatever happened was no fault of their own, that they could not have done anything differently to change the outcome of what happened, and to forgive themselves, because so many times in those type of situations, we blame ourselves. You know, maybe had I not worn this, or maybe had I not been in this situation, or maybe had I not went over here, maybe this would not have happened. But we have to forgive ourselves in those type of situations before we can begin to even forgive the other person. You know, it's so messed up because it's almost like, you know, when you're hurt, you realize that this happened because that person, whoever hurt me, was operating in their own trauma. Whatever event happened, they only did what they did out of what they understood and what they knew. But my healing is based on me. So it's like the trauma happened because of the other person, but my healing happens because of me. So forgive yourself. Understand that you could not have done anything differently. And, yes, it's absolutely normal. That's that uncomfort that I spoke about. That's that, you know, some people want to talk about shadow work. That's that shadow work that you have to get through to get to the point where you can realize and stand in who you are. And when you're dealing with sexual abuse, it's so sad because you develop these sexual tendencies that you don't even like. And then sometimes you don't know what you like because these things were imposed on you at such a young age in your developmental ages where you really don't know what you like. So, and when that happens, as you go through your healing, you have to learn what you like now. Now it's like, you know, do I really like, you know, licking elbows? You know, do I really like, you know, sucking toes? Or that's just something I was accustomed to. So it's a whole process. So in that, I'm going to say be patient with yourself. Be patient with yourself. Be gentle with your healing and understand that it was not your fault.
Yeah. I have quite a few friends who are listening tonight who I don't want to call them victims. I like to call them survivors of sexual assault, sexual abuse as children. And it's about four, and at least two of them, the memories didn't kick in until after high school, you know, when they became sexually active and started dating and had, you know, serious relationships. And that's when it hit them, and they overnight became different people, you know, and it's yeah, that's why we have you here, because they're listening and they're hanging off every word. Queen.
Yes. Okay.
Got a question?
So, yes. So, as far as this is more about your business. So, if you can let the people know any little telltale signs or any little things that may happen or maybe they may be experiences or have experienced that they should be able to just reach out to you to kind of have a conversation and kind of get the blueprint going, the groundwork going, if they have any questions about certain things, what would it be? Like if, I guess I should be asking if there's any type of advice you should give them if they have experienced certain things. Because some people think they're over things, and certain people think things didn't affect them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they think it's just reality because that was the norm for them, but that's not, you know, how it should be.
Mm-hmm. I always say the telltale signs is, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The telltale signs I would say would be how you react and respond to certain things. In the 21 day healing course that I offer, I talk about paying attention to your triggers. You know, as you start to talk about things, things start to bubble up. You know, I use that analogy. It's like a pot, you know, on stove boiling. You know, it bubbles up, and you have to pay attention to how your body reacts and responds. Pay attention to your thought process. It's a very internal, personal, me process, right? And so you have to be selfish during your healing. So you're paying attention to yourself. You're paying attention to your responses, how you react to certain things. You know, somebody say something to you. For example, if you're struggling with, you know, something that happened in your past and someone says, you know, yeah, because, you know, we're not the same. We come from two different walks of life. If you already have some type of insecurities about your upbringing, that statement is going to trigger you. So if your response is, well, what you mean? What you trying to say? You think you're better than me? If that's your response, that is definitely a traumatic response, because all that person said is, we're different. We're not the same. But if you start going back to 1995 when homegirl in high school was laughing at you because you were living in a project, that's definitely trauma. That's definitely trauma. So it's little things like that that we ignore but are so, so clear that you're operating in your unresolved childhood trauma. Somebody can say something or do something that is totally irrelevant to what happened in 1995, and instantly you'll go back to 1995, and all of a sudden now you're ready to punch this girl in her face for homegirl in 1995. You understand what I'm saying? Like, that's definitely a traumatic response. You know, if, you know, someone touches you, especially if we're talking about sexual abuse as a child, if someone walks up to you and touches the small of your back and you jump, it's a traumatic response. You know, if you can't handle someone being close in your personal space, if you can't handle eye contact, it's all of those little subtle things that we ignore that are triggers and traumatic responses for something that happened to us, because we did not, somewhere we lost that development where human connection was okay. And so when we lose that as children, it becomes foreign and strange to us as adults, and we react and respond that way. But, of course, we have the persona of, I've always been this way. This is how I am. You just got to take it or leave it. No, baby. You know, let's talk about that. Let's heal that. Let's work on that. Because there's something different on the other side. You know, you don't have to be that way. You know, you talk about anger, you know, anger and bitterness. You know, when someone says to you, why didn't you call me? Something so simple. I got stuff I got to do. And you automatically just respond. Those are traumatic events. Those are traumatic responses. And so it's a lot of different things. And there's no cookie cutter way of identifying trauma, because trauma is so broad. You know, you have, when you're talking about trauma, you have a lot of people who think that trauma is only exclusive to military vets. You know, people who have suffered hurricanes and, you know, all types of events like that. You know, someone who's been raped and molested, someone who's been neglected, someone who was homeless. All of these things are considered trauma because, again, remember, trauma is your brain telling you that this thing that's happening, you can't handle. Trauma is your brain telling you, I cannot cope with this. So that could be anything. So it's really no cookie-cutter way of identifying it. But if you call me and we talk about it, and as we're talking, those things will be revealed, and then we can work on them one by one and step by step.
Awesome. Definitely need y'all to call Ms. Barbara Ann. We'll give out her information at the end of the show. And because there are people from the Bahamas who are listening, who that entire island was traumatized last year, you know, during the month of September. You know, about 7,000 people were killed or displaced. You know, whole homes were wiped away. So, you know, it's a tough time to 2020 is a traumatic year. You either lost work, you lost family members due to COVID. It's just been a strange year of loss. So you came at the right time. And I hope you can help as many people as possible. Okay, we got a question. This is from Gotti the Body. Please, Gotti, for writing in. She's asking, she says, a question, could child trauma cause PTSD later on in life?
Absolutely. That's what PTSD is. Because trauma usually lasts between 3 to 5 months. And it gradually goes away as time goes on. If it lasts any longer than that, then it's definitely PTSD. Absolutely. So if you're 40 years old and you're still traumatized by something that happened when you were 10, it's PTSD now. It's no longer simply trauma. It was trauma at 10. At 40, now it's PTSD. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yep. Queen, got a question?
So many. I'm trying to figure out which one.
I can go all day. I can have it here till tomorrow morning. Talking.
Right. Okay. So I know you usually deal with adults in trauma. How hard is it? Because I don't want to beat up on y'all men, but any of those men that be in my inbox trying to kick it to me, if you're listening, you need to contact Barbara Ann, because that's the only way you're going to get through to me, because I need to make sure you are at a certain, you have a certain level of mental stability, because y'all hold a lot of stuff in. And I just had to throw that out there. Because some of y'all, you know, got some trauma, some things you got to deal with. But I know when you chimed in at a topic that we had, you was talking about, I just want to touch base on that again, about men is the hardest to kind of come forward or realize some things. So if you could just talk to my people for a second, the men, of the importance of dealing with some things and some of the issues that's going to come about in a relationship. when you are dealing with some things, or need to deal with some things, I should say. Yeah. Message me the link. And anytime somebody jump in my inbox, I'm going to say, boom, talk to her first. You know.
So, yes, brothers. I want to say that we're hard on the men, and society in itself are hard on the men, because they grow up in this, this society where they have to be hard. They have to be tough. You know, they measure their manhood according to their level of aggression, and they have to defend themselves. And so a lot of times their anger and their aggression is really just them lashing out and it's a cry out for help. And so it's difficult. I actually just did a segment a few weeks ago, Men Need Healing Too, and we dedicated 2 whole weeks to talking about men and giving them the space to be vulnerable, and how being vulnerable is not a sign of weakness. It's actually a sign of strength. I don't know about you, Queen, but if a man can cry to me, that's like the most thing that can turn me on, because it's like, oh, like that's a sign of he's opening up, you know, like not like wham, wham, cry.
Not cry, baby. Don't cry about everything, but you got to be able to express yourself. Yes, y'all may express yourself and show emotion. I don't want no man that can't show emotion and is all bottled up inside, and then when it come out, I'm going to have to two-piece them. No, I need you to be able to let it out when it needs to come out in the right way. So
when the men don't deal with their issues,
my taser retired, y'all.
She's not retired the taser. You might got to take that out of retirement. when the men,
well, I'm traumatized.
Yeah. but my experience of you is that at least you're open to talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Most men aren't open to even talking about it, you know, so they want to act like, you know, it's just they're fine, you know, and then they act like they lash out and they act out, and you just stand there and you just look at them like it's rough. It's rough for the ladies being in relationships with men who are traumatized and refuse to get the help, because you figure, like, as a man, you want to be a leader.
Right.
So if you're not dealing with your trauma, how can you lead? How are you going to leave something for your children? How can you lead a family if you're operating in this woundedness and this brokenness? And so a lot of men don't see themselves as wounded and broken. And so that's that, like that onion I talked about. You got to pull those layers back.
Mm-hmm.
And pull those layers back. So it's rough, and it's rough on the ladies because, you know, your trauma meets his trauma and y'all clashing. That's why I always tell people, if you're dealing with some trauma, your best bet is just to be single, because you don't want to bring that into a relationship with a woman, especially if she has children.
Yep.
They're already dealing with some stuff. You're supposed to come in and be the one to make everything easy. You're supposed to be the one to come in and, you know, provide ease for this woman and these children, not add added stress onto this family. So if you're dealing with some stuff and you're not ready to sit in that discomfort and actually heal and not look to that woman to be your saving grace, that is the worst thing that you can do, because we are not – some of us aren't equipped to deal with everything. Sometimes us women,
right,
we just want to be able to be women. We just want to be able to be feminine. You know, we laugh about it, how, you know, women are now more manly than men. It's because sometimes we have to be. It's not a choice. It's like, if I don't do it, it won't get done. Because you're looking at me, I'm looking at you, and we trying. You looking at me like, well, what you going to do? Because your mama, you know, took care of you. Your mama did everything for you, and when she got tired of doing everything, she said, you go. When she got tired of doing stuff for you, and then she told you need to go find a woman, you know, and then you go find a woman. Now you don't have to be your everything.
Exactly.
I had my share of mama boys, and I let people know my job is not to raise you, sweetie. You're supposed to come and be the other half. I'm not raised.
Let me tell you something. Right. I don't like to say be the other half, because I'm a whole person. I need you to be a whole person so that we can come together and share our wholeness together. I'm not half of anything. I don't need the other half. I'm not lost without the other person. I am a whole person, and I need you to be whole. So you gotta go get healed so you can be whole, so we can enjoy our wholeness together.
I like that.
Mm. House.
I like that.
Thank you for kicking us men in the nuts for the last 2-3 minutes, ladies. Appreciate it.
What about y'all? You asked me if I had questions. You know, I had questions. I mean, this is my mini counseling session right here. I gotta get it all in when I can, and I know certain people are listening. So I need you to really
listen.
You know.
You know, so fellas, if you've been handcuffed and tased by Queen Vi, please contact Barbara Ann for your adulthood trauma.
While you're contacting her about your adulthood trauma, just know the reason that you probably got tased is because your childhood trauma.
It all connects.
Oh, man.
I'm just saying. So, I mean, I want them to be whole. As Barbara Ann says, I want them to be whole when it comes to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, because just think about it. Especially, and you probably can relate to Barbara Ann, when you are in a business of helping and counseling people, and then you got to turn around and do it in your relationship, it can become a bit
baby.
Much.
Baby.
It's like, can I sit on the couch for a second? You know? Okay.
Well, hey, what about
that's how we gonna do a part. That's how we're going to do a part two to the show. The hour is enough time. I should have some of them. I'm going to say, listen.
Well,
I don't want to ask questions, you know, because
yeah.
I need it to be, like, personalized.
Well,
so.
it's something that that was said earlier about the leadership part when it comes to the brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part about being a leader is understanding when it's time to fall to humble yourself, time to understand that you don't jump out there when you're not ready, because
yeah.
you're setting yourself
yeah.
up for failure. And I mean, the same thing could be said for women. There are a lot
mm-hmm.
of damaged sisters out there who've been through stuff their entire life. You know,
mm-hmm.
they were suffering from childhood traumas as a kid. They watched mama go through stuff, and now here they are raising kids, and they got issues, and they're emotionally hurt. They're hurt and scarred so deep that when they take on a man in their life, they're not, you know, they're not prepared for the full,
mm-hmm.
especially, you ever see those people who get stuck at boyfriend, girlfriend, can't get to the marriage part?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Been together for
mm-hmm.
eons, but they just can't evolve to that next stage. And I, just me listening to folks, sometimes it seems like that it's due to growing up damaged.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say? We only got a few minutes. What do you say to people who, male or female, who've been damaged, and you know you're damaged? What do
mm-hmm.
you do?
Stay single until you heal yourself.
That's right. Work on yourself.
Work on
okay.
yourself.
Don't
because
come.
It's not
there
you go. It's not fair. It's not fair to you, and it's definitely not fair to the other person to enter into a relationship. And what we do is we expect the other person to be able to heal us. We expect the other person to be able to just know to do certain things. When we remove that expectation, then I think things will flow a lot easier. But in order to remove the expectation, you got to work on yourself.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Queen, we got like a minute, some change left. Ms. Barbara Ann, it's been amazing. Please plug yourself. Tell us how to get in contact with you.
Yes.
Thank you. No More Trauma Consulting on Instagram and on Facebook. You can also contact me at 484-489-0331. And
yes.
No
More
Trauma.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No More Trauma Consulting at gmail.com is the email. If you want to email me and ask me a question.
Okay.
Awesome,
and
awesome.
Also just know you can always tag us on Facebook and Instagram on any one of your posts that you do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Okay. Now we also mm-hmm. will repost as well. So I do want to thank you. Like I said, we're going to kidnap you for another show. because we got a whole lot to go. But also for any business owners that choose to use Queen Vibe for promotion, if you also support Barbara Ann's business, you will receive a discount on that as well. So please,
awesome.
Please support, like, share, follow, and spread the word. We have to get it together as a people so we can become stronger and band together. But any last words, Hakim, before I sign off?
I would like to thank the Queen for bringing in Ms. Barbara Ann. And Ms. Barbara Ann, I'm so happy to have you here sharing your wisdom and your experiences. It has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thank you, both of you. Thank you, Queen. Thank you, Hakim.
No problem. So that concludes our show for tonight. Until next time, we'll see you on Therapy Thursday. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Peace, y'all.